Okay, and welcome to the podcast. If you're listening to this, you're just diving into the truth about dyslexia. Maybe you've been shared this. Maybe you're a longtime listener who's wants to have a little listen again. We're going to be starting off at the beginning, and we're going to go through the core beliefs, the core understandings and learnings I've had over years of running this podcast. It's been nearly 3 years-ish. I can't remember exactly, you know, time like that doesn't really work in my head. So I'm Stephen Martin and I'm the host. So thank you for coming along. Hopefully you're going to get to know me a little bit better over these next 10 episodes. And we're going to dive deep on things that you may never have even clicked have anything to do with your dyslexia. You're going to learn how to see what's happening in your head. And we're going to dive into some of the bigger core challenges many of us have. Now, in this first episode, I'm going to go through my story because I think it's really important for you to get to know me, get to know what I'm about, and get to know why it's even worth listening. So we're going to go through about 5 key points in my life. There's a bunch more, but these 5 key points really represent my journey with dyslexia. So hopefully you love this episode, and I'll be back in a second. Okay, so let's start off right at the beginning. I was born on a cold winter's night. Okay, maybe that's a little bit too early. But what we're going to dive into now is the kind of early part of my story. I was born a child, you know, like many of us. And I had two parents. I had a mum and a dad. Both probably quite neurodiverse. Neither were ever diagnosed as dyslexic, but you know, with what I know today, it's quite obvious there's a bit of neurodiversity in there. When I say neurodiversity, I mean ADHD, dyslexia, very right brain creative thinking. What's interesting about my parents, and again, this isn't just about my parents this episode, but is that how they handled these challenges were both very, very different. You know, there were a lot of patterns that were the same. But my father, for example, was much more insular. He became very routine. That was how his family always dealt with these challenges, you know, with dyslexia and ADHD being so hereditary. And he went through his life, you know, just trying to stay safe. He tried to stay below the radar. He had his challenges through his own life, but he was very harsh. Huge issue with perfectionism, struggled managing people in his job, very direct, very tough, wasn't always conscious of how he was acting around other people, and was a hard dad. You know, many of us have had a hard parent, and he was very like that. My mum was the absolute opposite. She was an extrovert. She was loving and caring, needed to be liked, was a really key thing of hers, which she just wanted everyone to love her and like her, care about her. And so she'd bend over backwards to help her kids. So it's always like an interesting thing with parents. But I had a really weird childhood because I had one parent telling me I could do anything, nothing could stop me. And the other one kind of bringing me down back to earth, you know, with a baseball bat of sometimes of emotional, talk. You know, both of them loved me, but the way they handled that love was very, very different. So very confusing for a child of any type. So I grew up, across the world. Actually, I was in New Zealand. I'm a New Zealander. I'm a Kiwi. I was born over here. And my father got a job over in Saudi Arabia when I was about 7 years old, I want to say. So I got pulled out of school, moved overseas for, I believe it was 4 years. And that was a massive shift. Now, one thing I have learned with dyslexia that's beyond what people talk about is moving without a picture of where you're going is very, very hard on your life. You know, massive amounts of change to routine is really scary, and it kind of, although sometimes it can be fun and really powerful, it also causes negative kind of routines. And I saw that as a kid. I hated it. I would just cry in my room. I'd lost all my friends. This was back before the internet, right? This was like in 93. The internet was only really coming about. And being in a Middle Eastern country, you know, everything was limited. So I was in a private school with a bunch of people from, you know, all over England, America, Pakistan, India, interesting mix of kids at a private school. And I really enjoyed it. It was well looked after. We had a swimming pool, very hot, as you can imagine the Middle East could be. We were very much in a kind of like English speaking area. And I absolutely loved it. You know, it was an interesting world. Lots of experiences. It was so different to what I grew up with. But I turned to food because that was my father's way of dealing with pain. He would just stuff it down deeper and he would eat it. And so I did that for a lot of my childhood, which was a fun and fun and interesting experience. It wasn't that fun, but at the time I enjoyed it. Right? You know, that's kind of how we operate. So I did that. And at about the age of 10, I want to say it was 10, I was really struggling in some exams in the school. Now at 10, you're not doing quite the intense exams you are later on, but you're still doing stuff. And we were doing the English curriculum. Now, because it was a private school, one of the teachers kind of clicked that there was so much ability that they could see in me, but the problem was communicating it. I just couldn't communicate it, and I was really struggling to get it down onto paper. One of my big dyslexic triggers was copying text off the school board. I was just terrible at it. And so I really did my best to try and get it done, but it just wasn't very good, right? And so I got to sit down with a clinical psychologist, and they diagnosed me with dyslexia. I always remember that my mum said to me that the minute I found out, I said to her, at least I know I'm not stupid. At least I know there's a reason for the way I am, you know, in some context that could be paraphrasing. But it was, you know, she was like amazed and cried that, you know, I had that awareness at that age. And that kind of gave me some perspective as a kid. There was a reason I was struggling. And that's so valuable with dyslexia. There's a lot of people struggling without a proper diagnosis. And I was very, very lucky to get one. Now, back in those days, we're talking the 90s, right? 95, I think it happened. There wasn't a lot around dyslexia. It wasn't as big as it is today. It was still a growing thing. Things, you know, lots of people were still learning about it. So there wasn't a huge amount of support. You know, they knew that it was a more of a visual kind of thing. You know, you're going to struggle with reading, writing, and spelling, tracking off a board, which is another little one, but that was a huge one for me. And so I got a little bit of support. You know, they printed the notes from, you know, they had printed notes. They gave me a copy of it. They didn't expect me to write every note. So that was a small win. And they gave me a bit more time on things, which was pretty, pretty cool. So it was a starting point. I don't think it made me a massive genius, but definitely I managed to at least bumble my way through that part of school. So that was kind of the first part. That was primary school. That was the diagnosis for me. That was how it went. My mum went on to study dyslexia, you know, at that age. She's actually got a certificate in it. And we'll get on to the next part of the story in a second. Okay, on to high school. So in New Zealand, high school is from about, 13-ish till about 17, 18, depending when you go into it. It's about 5 years. And like, this was another real defining point for me. You know, I was coming into a different schooling system, you know, in a completely different country. You know, our schooling system's different to the English curriculum I was on. It was, you know, there were similarities, but it was quite different. And I always remember my mum worked really hard to get us into a good school. You know, we bought a house in an area we could get into the public school that I could go to, which was really kind of my family to make that decision to look after their kids like that. So I'm really appreciative. But what was always really super interesting is when I started, it would have been, I want to say it's 97, 98. You know, I'm trying to do the maths in my head. Yeah, it would have been 97, 98. I was born in 1985. So that was when I walked. You can kind of see, can you hear me as I'm saying this? I'm picturing everything I'm talking about. I'm picturing what happened. And then I'm trying to communicate it you know, we're going to get onto that and how that works with dyslexia in a later episode. But it's a really key thing that they don't really tell you, right? So, you know, the picture is going through my head is going to school. I could see the school grounds. I could see buildings that were built, this beautiful library they had. And what I can also see is the English department. So my mum, when I first went there, she decided that she was going to try and get a job there to support me, you know, which is pretty awesome. Like, my brother's also dyslexic as well. So it's important to note that. So two dyslexic kids, it's a very hereditary thing, dyslexia. So we went into this Rangitoto College was the school. And my mum went to try and become a teacher helper or someone to support kids like me. And at the time, New Zealand didn't recognize dyslexia at all. You know, there were people that knew about it, knew of it, and knew what it was, but it wasn't something recognized by the whole schooling system. And this was back in 97-ish. It didn't get recognized in New Zealand until 2006, 2007. In another episode I've done on the podcast, I talked to the people that actually got it introduced into New Zealand, which is pretty interesting. But, you know, this was 10 years before that. It seems nuts that I'm saying 1997. It doesn't sound like 100 years ago, right? And so my mum couldn't actually help. So she ended up getting an admin job in the English department, a support role, you know, kind of customer service for kids, helping kids out. So she managed to get into the school somehow to support us as much as she could, but it was very limited. You know, I kind of struggled through school, enjoying a lot more of the practical subjects, not so much PE. I was never the fittest kid. But enjoying economics and business was really fun, being able to create stories around maths. I loved creative writing. You know, I wasn't a great speller or writer, but I was very creative. You know, there were those things I really survived through, and I was always good enough to wangle my way through, just enough to get through school. I was pretty good in home economics. I wasn't too bad at cooking. Stuff like that, I survived my way through. And it wasn't until my last year of, my last couple of years of school where the exams got really tough, I was able to get what's called a reader-writer. You may have heard of that if you were diagnosed with dyslexia earlier on. And what's interesting about a reader-writer is, as a dyslexic person, your brain is super, super fast, super powerful. It's actually too powerful. It's kind of like you're controlling a car that doesn't quite have the right brakes or the right steering wheel, or and you haven't properly been taught how to use it. So what happens is I could come up with brilliant answers and creative essays. I just couldn't get it out of my head quick enough and in a good enough format. So what would happen is I would sit down with a reader writer. I would basically speak out the answers, and the writer would write it down. Now, people who are listening to this are going, man, this sounds so old. Isn't there a bit of technology? Didn't you just whip out your iPhone? And I was like, no, that didn't exist back then. Gosh, that makes me feel old. No, it didn't exist. We had to use humans. So the head of English department actually filled out my exams, me speaking to them. And I always remember, again, talking to my mom, and she would say, oh, he said that you were so smart and so fast, he could barely write it down. And he said he expected it to be quite a good result, because the result wasn't based on spelling and all that. They didn't care about that. They just did it right. So it was quite an experience, you know, at high school. So I basically did my exams and I passed everything. I wasn't like a scholarship student, but I survived. I survived through. Now, in the last year of school, I started losing interest, trying to decide what I wanted to do. And one of the naughty kids, you know, there's always the naughty kids in school, the ones that were really just out of there, or they were definitely perceived of that at the time. I'm sure I'd have a different vision of them now with what I know today. But what was, one of the kids goes, did you know you can just walk up to the office and sign yourself out of school and go and get a job? And I was like, wow, that sounds so cool. That can't be real. And he goes, yeah, that's real. And at the time, I was really messing around. I was probably one of the naughty kids. Like, you know, you can't see it from your own perspective. But I worked out that I could convince my form teacher that I got two free periods a day. So I managed, I was already wagging a bit of school time that I was sick of and hated. And I was smart enough to convince the form teacher, you know, that I was okay to do it. It was just funny. But in hindsight, it was funny. She may not agree with where I find the humor in that. But so I went to the school. I said, can I sign myself out? And they said, yep, here's the documents. Are you sure you want to do this? And I was like, yeah. So signed the paperwork and I was out of school that day. How cool is that? For me, that was pretty cool. And from there, I went on to get a job and you know, start my adult life. And we'll jump into that in the next section. Okay, so that was high school. I've never really done a deep dive this deep, so I hope it's enjoyable. I hope it's interesting. I hope you're relating to it. But where I want to go now is after I walk out of high school, what happened? What happened to this dyslexic boy lost in the real world? So, you know, humorously, I moved next door. You know, when I moved out of home, you know, a friend of mine's parents had bought this house like a door down, like door two doors down maybe, the street from my mum's house. And they were looking at, he was, you know, the parents were going to rent it to friends of their son and their son was going to live there. So I ended up moving in, you know, with my best mate, which was really awesome. But what was fantastic is being dyslexic, I wasn't good at doing my washing. I wasn't good at remembering stuff. So I could always run home to my mum who would actually wash my clothes. You know, isn't that cool? You know, don't we love mums? She always loved to be liked and she was always kind like that. So a lot of love to her. But it helped me get started moving out, which was pretty cool. I got a job working at the AA, helping people with driver's licenses. Humorously, it was a very organized and process-driven role, which was interesting. And I, you know, it was one of those ones where a lot of the jobs I've had in my life when I was working for other people were about a year. I lasted about a year. That was my turnover rate before I got completely bored, mind-numbingly broken, and just didn't care anymore. So, you know, I remember I ended up doing Sir Edmund Hillary's driver license renewal. He was the guy that was the first to ever climb Mount Everest and a couple of famous musicians and stuff in New Zealand. So that was an interesting experience. It gave me a taste of the real world, gave me a taste of what money looked like. That was always a bonus. But yeah, like many, I thought dyslexia kind of just left you once you got a job and you just carried on with life. It was only about tests, right? Schooling and tests. So I just kind of carried on. I didn't pay much attention to it. Like many dyslexics, I'd put together a lot of old solutions in my life that kind of got me through and got me, you know, to where I needed to be. I could always try and get myself out of a hole and I could always do just enough. So that was the AA. I then got a job in a few different sectors in insurance. I got a job a few years down the track in insurance. And yeah, probably the one before that, I was working at an investment firm and an admin team. Imagine being at an investment team, investment firm in an admin team. And I was sitting there going, I'm not sure how I got this role. To me, it was like a promotion. I liked the name of the company at the time. It was a fancy name and it had a nice office and a nice place. I don't think I really knew what the job was. I just kind of put all my effort into the interview and wanted the job so much. I got it. I managed to dream it. So I got it kind of thing. I believed in myself. I was like, I can do this, even though I didn't know what it was. And I always remember we did this personality test. So they took the whole team out to this yacht club and they put us through a personality test. And at the end, what comes out is a report of where everyone in the team is. And we had a manager came up on the side of where great managers are based. The admin team all came out on the side where, you know, admin people should come out. And then I was in a completely different zone. It was like a little dot for my personality test. Like I was not even in the same region. And at that moment, I thought maybe this type of job isn't for me. But I didn't even ever connect it had anything to do with dyslexia or the way I thought like that. I just knew I was a bit different to the average human being, you know, that was in these roles. I always remember that was so funny. So I moved on to more of a business development role, a little bit more talky-talky, so it was a bit more in my wheelhouse, but still a lot of admin. It was just a lot more self-control. I had a lot more control over my time. And I always remember in that role, it was an 8 hour a day job. And I managed to get it down to about 2 hours a day of actual work. I kind of worked out what was the result they wanted me to achieve. How could I achieve it quicker? And then how could I play on the internet for the other 6 hours a day and occasionally answer an extra email that came through to look like I was extra high performer. So I managed to do that for a while until I got bored and I finished the internet. That was the other challenge of that job in the insurance space. And then I went out and became a broker. I actually sold insurance. So it was even more talky-talky, less paper, more talky-talky, which is always good. And I survived at that role for another year, but insurance is only so interesting, right? You know, you can only do so much with it. If you've had a story in your life where insurance has made a massive impact and you could see the value, you know, those salespeople were great. I didn't have that story. So I kind of just, I used it as a stepping stone, as a great experience, and I'm very grateful for it, but it was never for me. You know, but all through this, dyslexia never popped reared up again. I built enough stuff in my life to pretend it didn't exist. So I carried on through life. I ended up going through and becoming an entrepreneur. It's another story for another day. Building web design, marketing businesses, a bunch of them that went up and down. Some succeeded, some failed. You know, I went through bouts of massive anxiety and challenges that come with being such a visual learning preference or visual preference of how your brain works. Again, we'll go into that deeper in the future. But it was, my working life was challenging. I got to a point where the best thing I ever did was go out on my own, work for myself, be my own boss. I used to joke that I was unemployable after I did that because I loved it so much. Being able to control my energy became a lot easier. But with that came the challenges of a non-consistent income and a bunch of, things that I thought I knew best with where I didn't. I was wrong, but I thought I was right, so I stuck with it. So, and that's what you see with a lot of dyslexics. Some of us are overly confident in some things and have zero confidence in other things, which is really important to recognize. And that was kind of those years. The next step we're going to go into is the time when I actually learned what dyslexia meant. That's a big one. So let's get to the next section. So let's dive into the fun bit. This is all about dyslexia and finding out what it really meant. Now, if you remember, I'd already found out I was dyslexic when I was 10. I'd been told it was reading, writing, spelling, and I felt I knew a little bit more because I knew it was also tracking from a board. But like so many people, I thought it was just these external things, these kind of wordy things. I didn't really know why. You know, it's one of those things you get told, you're dyslexic. Okay, that means I can't do this, this, and this very well. Great. How do I solve those problems? And that was how like most people go through life with it. And I'd always stuck it at that very top level, surface level. I never really digged any deeper, never thought to dig any deeper. And so I carried on with my life till I was 31, 32 realistically, without knowing much more. But it all started when I was sitting around a bar. Now, as you can see, I'm picturing the bar itself with my dad. And my dad said to me, you know, you've always been hunting for something in your life. You know, you've done all these, you watch all these motivational videos, motivational speakers. You've learned a bit about NLP and all this other amazing stuff, meditation, yoga. You've tried all this random stuff. It's not stuck very well, but you've tried it. And he said, it's because you're kind of searching for something, isn't it? And I said, yes. And he goes, I wonder if it has anything to do with your dyslexia. And so at that point, I was like, no, it doesn't. Don't be stupid. That's reading, writing, and spelling. I use spell check, right? I use a grammar checker. You know, I'm okay. I'm okay, Dad. You don't know what you're talking about. You're getting old. You're getting on. And I was probably a bit dismissive. And he kept following me up about it. And he said he found an expert that actually lived. Theoretically, you could walk to their house in about 30 minutes. And I was like, oh, that's interesting. Maybe I will have a look. And I had a quick look at their website and said, oh, that's interesting. And then I didn't do anything. And so my dad kept following me up, and about five times later, and you know, if you know anyone with dyslexia, you other than yourself, you got to follow them up five or six times. You think you're being annoying, but they need it, or they just forget things. So I was happy my dad had chased me, and I finally actually picked up the phone and called Vanessa. Now, she was unavailable, so I left a message. Now, after that date, Vanessa then tried to follow me up and say, okay, do you want to book in for an initial consultation? And I ignored her about five times. I swear, I was so lucky she kept chasing me. And then on the fifth time, she's like, let's lock in a time, come up and see me. And I finally got back to her. So that was two people chasing me five times each. I'm not sure if it was because I was scared what I was going to find out, or I was just in a different world. I was thinking, overthinking it, or thinking about other stuff, or yeah, I just didn't have any bandwidth. So I booked in and went along, and I come to this person's home who's got an office down the bottom, knock on the door, and this bubbly Vanessa pops out and says, let's go inside and let's have a conversation. And she started asking me questions about when I found out I was dyslexic, you know, what challenges had I been dealing with, and really, you know, asking me about things. And it was a good conversation. I started to learn a lot more about dyslexia and what it meant. But it wasn't until a specific moment happened that the penny dropped about what dyslexia meant for my life. Now, I was sitting in this office. Imagine a wooden desk between me and Vanessa, a really beautiful, it's kind of like a door, like this beautiful oak door without a handle that was made into a table. That's how I remember it, at least. It was just beautiful. And it had like this brick walls around it. It was stunning. How are you doing picturing it? You know, have you got a picture in mind? Now, what happened was my eyes went up when Vanessa said something, and I kind of left the room. I was kind of thinking about something else. I got lost in my head, you could call it. But she picked up on it and said, where did you go? And I said, what are you talking about? Thinking this lady had lost her mind. And she goes, where did you go? I know you left the room. You weren't fully listening to me. It looked like you were listening, but I know you weren't. And so I was like, wow, she'd picked up on that. That was pretty impressive. There's so often that I would just go into my head. I would look like I'm listening. Sometimes I'd even respond like I was listening, but I wasn't really listening. I was in my head thinking about a million different things. And so I said, oh, I could hear the builder hammering on your deck. D-E-C-K, Kiwi accent. It's a bit hard to work that one out. And I could hear the builder working away. And she goes, could you see a picture of him in your head? And I said, yeah, I can picture him. And so I pictured this. I had this builder working on her deck. She went to me, wow, you're amazing. And I was like, okay, why is that? And she goes, have you ever met my builder? And I said, no. And she goes, have you ever been on my deck? And I said, no. And she goes, but you can picture it, right? And I was like, yep. And she's like, well, how do you know that my deck is not covered in little yellow rubber ducks? And I stopped. And I took a breath and went, I guess I don't know that. And at that moment, it all flooded to me, you know, wow, if I'm creating a picture in my head of things I haven't seen before based on old thoughts or presumptions, and I can do it so quickly and easily, is this creating a memory that isn't actually real? And it was like, wow, that's amazing. Like, is that really happening? Does that happen to everyone? And Vanessa goes, no, it doesn't, but it means that a lot of what's in your head has been self-created. It's not what you've seen with your own two eyes. Because our minds are so visual and so powerful in that way, is that they want to create stories and pictures for everything. And so at that moment, it was like a handful of pennies dropped in my head. And I said, wow, is this true? Is this real? Why wouldn't anyone have told me this? It's crazy, right? Someone's got to be telling people this stuff. And so that was the moment I realized dyslexia was more than just reading, writing, and spelling. that it was a preference the way my mind worked. And we will go into this in episodes coming up, but it was a taster for me. I went on to do a Davis dyslexia program, which was really good and gave me a new perspective on it. I did a lot of other work with Vanessa, and we decided to create this podcast and this company, The Truth About Dyslexia, as a brand, to help others understand what it truly is and how it's affecting them. Because there are so many adults in the world that have no clue what is happening, and no fault of their own. They just haven't been told. You know, they've been taught to drive an automatic car when actually they've got a manual gearbox in their car, and they're crunching the clutch and the gears because no one's taught them how to use their mind. And so that's how I kind of started this journey into the truth about dyslexia. I wanted to get it out. I wanted to share my story and my learnings along the way. But in the last 4 or 5 years now, it has been an eye-opening journey. You know, how little I knew beforehand, how many things I was doing unconsciously, how I had no idea why I was doing it. You know, all the anxiety, all the self, beating myself up, the low self-esteem and confidence. You know, I thought I was just lucky a lot of the time. I didn't understand why. And I didn't know how to actually get what I wanted in my life. And so in the last segment of my story, I'm going to talk a little bit about one more diagnosis I got and kind of how my life's changed because of what I've learned and what we teach, you know, through this podcast and the truth about dyslexia. So let's dive into the last section. Okay, guys, this is the final section. I promise my podcasts usually aren't this long. I promise they're usually about like 10 to 12 minutes. I just wanted to get my story out there properly with a lot more detail. And so you can listen to this in bite sizes, but usually you'll find the next podcasts coming up are about 10 to 12 minutes. I won't dwell too long. So just to finish this one off, I want to talk a little bit about it and what I've discovered and just give you a taste of what it's going to look like from here on in. If you're listening to this, ideally this is the first one you've listened to give you a bit of a feel for who I am. I speak from the heart. I share my stories. I share my insights into life, not just about dyslexia, but how to use your dyslexic mind to get what you want and to deal with some of the challenges of life that occur. So you'll get that as you listen to more of it. It's nice and easy listening, hopefully. Most of them are pretty good. You'll notice the ones where I go off on a bit of a tangent. Some are better than others. But, that's just my self-criticism, self-critic coming out. But the last thing I wanted to share is a couple of years after I went through this dyslexia process, I also realized that I also had ADHD. I went to a psychologist, spent the money, and got a proper diagnosis. And what you find the more you dig into this is how closely linked ADHD and dyslexia are. Although there are still so many more studies to do, so much more to dig into, you realize they're branches of the same tree. You know, not everyone is highly dyslexic and highly ADHD. We're much more like a cocktail, you know, a shake of dyslexia, you know, two drops of ADHD, a little bit of something else. Everyone is unique, but they let's just say they're very close bedfellows, very close friends. So working out I was ADHD on top of it, you know, it's kind of like just putting some accelerant on the fire and realizing, hey, okay, I really am a right brainer. I really am creative. You know, I understand my challenges with focus. I understand my challenges with a bunch of stuff relating to it. And I've had a couple of great ADHD doctors on the podcast who have been awesome. There's a great guy who wrote a book called ADHD 2.0. His name escapes me. There's my dyslexia. I can see his face, but I can't tell you his name. It'll come to me in the middle of the night, as it always does. But I guess what I've learned in this last period of time that I'm going to share with you are some of the things that are really beyond, you know, the understanding of dyslexia, you know, reading, writing, and spelling. Those are usually the lowest problems these days. Things like voice to text, you know, tools like Grammarly. Learning to touch type was a godsend. I learned that in high school. I didn't mention that, but that was huge for me. Touch typing allowed me to get stuff out of my head at high speeds which was super powerful. I could even backspace at super speeds. It was so worth the time I put into it. And if you ever want to learn it, make sure you play games, and those games will help you learn. But that's a whole nother podcast. And I think there is actually a podcast on touch typing that I did years ago. So there's a heap of stuff, you know, that you're going to learn from this going forward from me. We're going to talk about things like trigger words and what a trigger word is and why no one's told you about them. And for me, this blew my brain when I learned about trigger words. We're going to talk more about disorientation. That's what I did when I saw the builder in my head. We're going to talk about the duality effect, you know, how you can be such a hypocrite in your life. Why one day you believe something, the next day you believe something completely different and don't know why there's something wrong with that or challenging about that. You know, how we sit on each end of the bell curve is a way a friend of mine, Callum McCurdy, would say it. So we're going to talk about a bunch of this stuff. We're going to talk about these core principles. And the next episode will be, how do you know you are dyslexic, and what actually is dyslexia in our definition? The truth about dyslexia's definition. So we're going to dive into that in the next episode. I really hope you enjoy it. If you find this valuable, if you know anyone else who's dyslexic, or you start to think people are dyslexic, pass them along this specific podcast. It'll help them get an idea of someone else's story. And these next 10 episodes are going to be super valuable for everyone. Have an epic rest of your day. My name is Stephen Martin, and I'll be back in a couple of days on the podcast. Hey, if you're enjoying the podcast so far and you want to give us a like and a subscribe, we'd really appreciate it. All reviews are really, really loved by us because it helps get the podcast out to more adults with dyslexia that are struggling. Also, check out truthaboutdyslexia.com. You'll find our little quiz, a fantastic 20 things to know if you love someone with dyslexia, and also our fantastic Facebook group called the Truth About Dyslexia Support Group, helping adults just like you. We're up to 2,200 members and growing. Have an epic rest of your day.